You're playing with me, right? Are you deaf?
Yes, yeah, I'm completely deaf.
Why does your voice sound like a female? Is there only one sign language? Are there different types of way you interpret signs?
Every country will have a different sign system.
What age did your family realize that you were deaf? In the school, did you face bullying?
In primary school, I think it was fine. Secondary school was fine. But college was actually where I experienced the negativity.
You were bullied by deaf people, you're saying?
Yes.
Don't you have any apps instead of interpreter, because interpreter is not practical daily life?
Technology is growing, but in terms of an AI generated interpreter, we have some models.
Do government in your country support, or do you know any other countries who support and basically give something monthly which encourages your professional journey? How did you choose the profession which you are in right now? I'm assuming that you do business trainings and you help deaf people, you motivate them on their professional journey. So you're a trainer.
I do business consultation with deaf, hard of hearing and hearing people as well. So with other business people, and a hearing person came up to me and I gave them my business card. And the hearing person said, I don't think you should have the word deaf.
Your dream was to be a millionaire when you were a child. Are you a millionaire yet?
I'll have to check in the bottom drawer. I'm not sure how much cash I've saved up. I'd have to have a little check.
There's so many actions you need to do in a second for interpreter to understand.
Announcing the awards, but the interpreter didn't tell me when my name was read out. I think maybe the interpreters somehow they just didn't clock my name. So that was a real embarrassment.
This podcast is so heavy for me. This episode was something new for me, not just another guest, but a whole new world. I sat down with Shehzad Nawab, a deaf entrepreneur, a global speaker, and what followed was an eye-opening conversation on inclusivity, awareness, and real challenges the deaf community faces every single day. From learning how to greet someone in sign language to how a missed announcement in an airport could change your entire day, this episode is packed with things most of us never think about. It was my first podcast in space, and I hope it's not the last. If this message moved you even a little, please share it. Subscribe to the channel and help us reach more people. Let's make this conversation more common. Hey Shehzad, hi, how are you doing?
Oh, hello. Hi, I'm fine, thank you.
That's all right, but why does your voice sound like a female? That's not the voice.
Well, yes, I'm profoundly deaf, so I've got an interpreter with me who's speaking my voice for me, so I hope it's clear. I hope you can all hear her.
You're playing with me, right? Are you deaf?
Yes, yeah, I'm completely deaf.
Wow, I have never done a podcast with someone who is deaf.
Yeah, now you are.
Thank you so much for coming to the World's Local Podcast. It's our honor to have you. Like, I have never expected in my life that I would start a podcast and invite someone like you and who is deaf.
Absolutely. It's a great opportunity to have a chat and actually really think about the difference between the hearing and deaf cultures and what's involved in both communities, the hearing community, the deaf community. And now we've got an interpreter as well. It's a whole different world. So it's really important to expose it.
You know, I called you deaf. Why didn't you get offended? People over here, I think they also call different names like specially abled or specially gifted. Are these kind of names, do you like to be called as these names, or do you like to be called as deaf?
Well, I'll explain and clarify, because I think people do get confused about terminology. And there are different levels of deafness. Some people can speak, some people can lip read, some people use sign language. So some people can speak really well, some people use sign language. And so people like to describe themselves in different ways. And I think it is easy to get confused if you're kind of not operating in this world. So I don't lip read. I can read and write, and I use sign language to communicate. But when I fly abroad, for example, if I'm going through security at Birmingham Airport, people often ask me if I can lip read, and I say, no, I can't, I'm profoundly deaf. And so they apologize, and then they write messages to me on their mobile phones. And that's great. That's a great form of communication. And then when I arrive at a hotel, a deaf person, hearing person will ask me, you're deaf, can you lip read? And I say, no. And then we have to communicate through written English. So not all deaf people can lip read.
There is a way that you can read lip, like that's also a kind of a a skill someone has?
Yes, yes. Perhaps I can explain. I think there are different ways to describe deaf people, and people have different levels of deafness. So I am profoundly deaf. That means I can't hear any sounds. I couldn't hear someone knocking on the door. I can't hear hands clapping. I can't hear voices. I'm fully and profoundly deaf. Then there's sort of another group of people who might describe themselves as hard of hearing. Some of them can use mobile phones. Some of them can lip read. A third group of people would say I've got a hearing loss, which means I was born hearing. I used my hearing throughout my life and had a rich and varied life, but maybe I've listened to music really loud or had some kind of work-based accident, and then I lose my hearing. So that's hearing loss. And mostly those people are good lip readers, and they often don't use sign language. So I'm completely different. I don't lip read, I use sign language, but some deaf people will lip read but not use sign language at all. And then the final category of people would, I mean, obviously, become deafened to an accident, or it's a very sudden acquiring deafness. They may not be able to hear doorbells or hear people knocking on the door, so they have to rely on visual clues. So that's why, you know, traffic lights are great. I'm looking at those visual cues. In the UK, when we cross roads, we have the traffic light system. So the colours of the traffic lights will tell me when I can cross the road. I can't hear the beep that comes with the crossing machine.
That's amazing.
So, you know, I was diagnosed as deaf at a young age. You often have to do audiology tests to find out what level of deafness you have. And so an audiologist will find out what kind of adapted or assistive technology might be useful for you. Some people have cochlear implants, which is quite a big operation. I don't believe in forcing people to have a cochlear implant, especially when they're young. I've always been brought and raised as a sign language user. I'm very proud of my deaf identity. And my parents, they're both hearing. I suspect, because they are second cousins, I think potentially somewhere back in previous generations, the kind of family tree probably crosses at some point way back in the generations. And then my father and mother met and had a family. And I think potentially I could be a result of that. Parents said when I was born, a little bit premature.
I would prefer you answer to my questions short and precise. So because, you know, that'll look more better for podcast, because you have already answered some of my questions. So my questions are going to be unbased. But it's amazing. I love that you're expressive. It's amazing that you're expressive and, you know, you have a lot to speak with your sign language. Talking about sign language, I heard that sign language is universal. Is there only one sign language, or are there different types of way you interpret signs?
So, sign language is not homogenous. Every country will have a different sign system. It's the same with hearing people. For example, in England, we speak English. Other people might speak other spoken languages. It's exactly the same in the deaf community. Deaf people develop their own sign system depending on their cultural context and where they live. So obviously in America, they have American Sign Language. Britain, we have British Sign Language, and the two are very, very different. So every country has developed their own sign language, and they are all different around the world. And so we might have some similarities between the signing systems, and deaf people have developed what they call an international sign, so they can communicate cross borders. When I'm with an English-speaking person, then I'll use BSL. When I'm with someone who uses a different sign language, if I know it, I'll use their sign language. And so, for example, in France and Spain, when I visit France and Spain, I'll adapt to an international signing system. If I know the sign system, I'll use it. And international sign also sort of uses a lot of gesture and body language.
Interesting. What age did your family realize that you were deaf? Because you said that you were born premature. I'm sure by that time they couldn't even make it out, right?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think when I was born and I went to school and primary school and secondary school, it was very, very difficult. I had sort of British Sign Language that I was being exposed to, and English, which follows its own completely different grammar structure. So sometimes you can sign individual words, but that's not proper sign language using sign language structure. So going to school, it was quite difficult because obviously I'm using sign languages, but in school, they want to give you really heavy English texts and they follow a different grammar structure to what I'm used to. So it's really difficult to access spoken English. I would say that I'm still not 100% confident with reading and assimilating information, heavy texts. So I usually work with an interpreter and they might explain specific jargon words. And then I might be able to actually give them a sign for that. And we kind of work collaboratively, picking out words and jargon and working together. So when I went to school and had exams at college and school, getting a written paper was really, really nerve-wracking. And there might be questions that you need to write 200 words in response to. And that's really hard for someone that's used to expressing themselves physically and through a signed form of language. So I do think English can be a real gap in the deaf community. So written and spoken language can be really difficult. I had to have special support. I had extra tutorials. I had extra English lessons, lots of one-to-one tuition to help me build up my knowledge of English. And I think I've heard that in the UK, some deaf people leave school with a reading age of 9. So it's really different to a hearing environment where you're assimilating language just by taking it in as you're out and about. As a deaf person, I'm constantly having to ask what's the context of this word? What does this jargon mean? It's a lot of extra labor in order to learn written language.
Did you say that you went to a mainstream school, not a special school? And are there any special schools for deaf people?
So to answer your first question, I chose to be educated in mainstream settings, primary school, secondary school, college and university. I was in mainstream environments with hearing people the whole time. The UK had deaf schools. We don't have actual accurate statistics for deafness. So the government accepts there are up to about 12 million deaf and hard of hearing people around the UK, but we think there's probably about 50,000 sign language users. And 20 years ago, there were a lot of deaf schools, but unfortunately, this provision is being cut now. So in the north of England, there's 3 deaf schools. I think there's one in Manchester, 1 or 2. In the West Midlands, 3 or 4. London, you've got a few. So, but the provision has really been cut over the last couple of decades. So I went to university and that was a mainstream university. In actual fact, in America, they have a deaf university called Gallaudet in Washington, D.C. And that is actually the world's only deaf university.
That's amazing. So to have someone deaf in your family, there is, of course, extra additional cost than a normal kid, I suppose, because you need the extra special attention and care, right? Was that a challenge?
Before actual primary school, I went to nursery and my parents were really, really worried about me. They were worried about my future. They were worried about my life. Am I going to have a good life or am I going to have a bad life? Is my deafness going to present a real challenge? So my parents went to the local council and asked them which would be the best school, mainstream school, for my son. and the local council gave a few options of school provision. And my parents went and looked around these different schools. I think, I don't know for sure, but I believe about four or five different schools my parents looked around. I think probably five. And they brought me with them and we looked around schools. And a lot of schools had a specialist unit for deaf and hard of hearing children in the school. So my parents didn't have to spend extra money. This is provided by local education authority and local education councils in the UK. So in order for me to thrive in a mainstream environment, I had specialist tutorials and specialist support from a deaf unit in the school. But my parents really wanted me to go to a local school near the home. And we tried one primary school initially and it didn't really work out. And then we moved to another mainstream primary school when I was about six, seven. And I stayed there actually until I was 11. And then I moved to secondary school. And I was able to pick a secondary school that I felt comfortable with. I would have an interpreter with me at that secondary school. Any additional support that I needed throughout my education, the local council paid for that. Obviously, I had to have additional tutorials and a different additional support. And then when I finished school at 16 and I got my exam results, I wish I'd got these high marks, lots of A's, A stars we have in the UK. But unfortunately, because of the difficulty in acquiring written English for a deaf person, I wasn't as pleased with my results as possible. But obviously, they had colleges, they had interpreters funded by the local council. Some colleges you have to pay for certain courses that you want to do. It really depends on what you want to study. But I went to college, but it was difficult because after I'd finished my exams at 16, they're called GCSEs, I sort of had a bit of a kind of diverse journey to resit English and maths. I loved the idea of being a pilot. That was my passion. And my tutors were worried about the potential of a deaf person flying the plane because of all the comm systems. So they said perhaps it's better to do MVQ level 1, 2, and 3, which is another qualification. And then I thought, well, actually, I'd like to do a course which would allow me to attend university. And in the UK, we have these access courses, which is 1 year intensive course where you do business, marketing, finance, English and maths to really prepare you for university. And I'd have some additional tutorial sessions as well. So I did that 1 year course and then was able to apply for university. So I had a very different journey, especially from 16 onwards till I went to university. I did a variety of different colleges, different courses. In terms of interpreting, at college it was good. I had an interpreter with me and a consistent and stable interpreter. But when I went to university, interpreting provision wasn't as successful. I had lots of different interpreters and I didn't have any consistency throughout my course. And I also felt the quality wasn't as good as I'd really hoped for.
You went too far, by the way. I didn't ask you to go to the university. We are still in the school. I still have questions of school, which isn't finished. So in the school, did you face bully or did you face more of a protection or care? Like, how was the treatment like from your fellow students?
So in primary school, I think it was fine. Secondary school was fine. But college was actually where I experienced the negativity. And because, interestingly enough, when I was doing my education until the age of 16, I was in mainstream schools and it was really fine. When I was 16, I tried to go to a specialist deaf college and then suddenly I was really bullied. And I think maybe there's two reasons for that. Other deaf students bullied me. I think I didn't use full and rich British Sign Language like I'm using now because I was in mainstream education. I signed and spoke. I was with people who had a very strong deaf identity, were profoundly deaf, strong sign language users. So weirdly, for the only time I really experienced bullying was at the hand of other deaf students.
So again, just to make it clear, you were bullied by deaf people?
Yes. Yes.
So you're saying among the deaf people, the support is low. I mean, even they bully each other. I mean, that's quite interesting because I thought you would rather support each other, right?
Yes, exactly. And I think perhaps there are some reasons. When I went to the deaf college, there were all deaf students there. A lot of them used very, very rich and complex British Sign Language. They didn't use lip pattern. They didn't follow English grammar structures. But of course, the way I've been raised was with mainstream hearing people. So I always signed following an English grammar structure, which is not the way formal British Sign Language works. So I believe that's potentially the reason why I was bullied. It was a language issue.
You know, so many people like out there, they have these general, maybe a bit naive kind of questions. So I might even ask that for our people to actually have awareness, like how a deaf people, let's say my first question would be, how do you guys dream? Do you dream in sign language or in visuals or?
Well, when I was about, I'd say 11 or 12, 13, obviously I was born profoundly deaf. But I used to go to the GP often for hearing aid checks. I used to have hearing aids. I don't use them anymore, but I had tests, audiology tests with sounds, trying to see if I can access or hear any sounds at all. And the GP said, why don't you try having a cochlear implant, which is an operation. So when I was 13, I had a cochlear implant. And then after that, I could access a variety of different sounds. I could hear perhaps if an aeroplane went over, I could hear a door banging. I could hear newspaper being crumpled or paper being rustled. But that only started when I was 13. When I was 14 or 15, it started to actually hurt the nerves in my cheek. So the way the cochlear actually transmits sound through the skull, it started to actually give me nerve damage in my cheek. So when I was 16, I went to the deaf college and all the profoundly deaf students using sign language, some of them had cochlears, but they were a bit anti-cochlears. And I realized, oh, when I was about 16, 17, 18, I decided to get rid of my assisted technology. So I had a cochlear implant when I was 13, used it till I was 16, 17. And then from the age of 18, I no longer used that technology. It didn't suit me anymore.
From the age 13 to 16, I know that you went through pain, but were you also a little bit happy that finally I could hear and make out some noises? Like, what was that? Were you more happy or were you more in pain?
I'd say I was absolutely fine. As a profoundly deaf person, I couldn't hear any sounds. But the GP offered me a cochlear and I thought, well, why not try it? So at the age of 13, I had this operation. And after that, they did lots of testing. I had to sort of learn to identify sounds. And they also kind of switched the cochlear and they actually increase the intensity of sounds that I can access. But in order to really access the level of sound that I needed, they had to turn the cochlear right up and it started giving me nerve damage in my cheek. So then it became very painful. Every time a loud noise went into my cochlear and was processed, it would really hurt me. So when I took the cochlear off, I was fine. So then I decided to get rid of it. It wasn't helpful.
So you said from 13 to 16, you had those kind of cues. Right now, how do you pick your sudden cues? Like someone is walking behind, some danger is there, or something is falling or breaking. Like, what are the measures which you have, you know, taken to have that sense of emergency when it is needed?
After I removed my cochlear, I was in a world of silence. So then your sight takes over. You have to be very, very vigilant visually. You're always checking your peripheral vision. You're always looking behind you. When you're driving, if you can't see an ambulance in your rearview mirror, you're always checking and making sure that your blind spot's covered. At a train station, for example, when you're waiting for a train, you know what time the train is supposed to leave. but it never turns up at the platform, you could be waiting 10, 20 minutes and you realize potentially there was an information message sent out over the tannoy, but I'd missed it. Sometimes you miss trains because you don't hear the platform has been changed and you don't hear those announcements. When I fly, for example, I'm ready to go to the gate. On the list of departures, you have to watch that television like a hawk because you need to know when your gate's announced. So I won't hear that announcement. So I'm constantly using the screens to know which gate to go to wait for boarding. Obviously, no one tells you if you're sitting at the gate and the plane's cancelled and you're sitting there waiting for ages. It's happened to me previously at Birmingham Airport. I was going to fly to France and everything looked normal. Everyone was having their chats at the gate. And I thought, oh, there's no issue with the train. And then it got delayed. It was about half an hour, 40 minutes, an hour. And then I tapped the person next to me and I wrote a little note for them. I said, I'm deaf. What's happening? What's going on? He said, oh, you're deaf. And then wrote me a note back. And he said, oh, a person was taken ill. So the plane's been delayed. So that's issues that I've gone through. And also, previously, I went to a meeting in Nottingham with a deaf client. And I went to their local office. And I parked my car and I was walking to the office and there were traffic lights and the traffic was moving. And I saw the green man, which is the indication that you can walk across the road. But then it very quickly changed to red. But I was completely convinced that I was walking in the right direction, but the light was actually signaling another direction, which I hadn't seen. And so I saw the traffic continuing and then some traffic was stopping. I couldn't see other pedestrians and I nearly got run over and had to jump back because I couldn't hear the traffic light beeps. And if I'd been able to hear the beeps of the traffic lights, I'd have known that these traffic lights were to signal a specific crossing that I wasn't trying to cross. So it was just these kind of things can happen, but you are super vigilant and very visual.
These challenges don't stop. Like it is from the beginning, from childhood, and it comes in different forms, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Born from birth to death.
What are the common misconceptions you think normal people have about deaf people? Especially when you said that you were in train station, like no one knows you're deaf. Are you wearing some signs? I mean, I'm sure in the car you have some signs probably, like, I just want to know what is how do you show your identity? Number one, I know that you sometimes write and give a note, but other than that, how do you think, people from, to basically identify you, like, what do you think normal people should know about deaf people?
Throughout my life, it has been hard. There have been challenges. About 3 years ago, the government announced that deaf people or disabled people could use a special symbol of sunflowers and have these as a sort of lanyard, a ribbon around your neck with a sunflower on. And these can be indicating that you have what's called a hidden disability. So people know to treat you extra gently, to offer you some support. So you can use sunflowers, the symbol of a sunflower, and there are these special lanyards that you can wear around your neck or badges. When you're driving, there's no indication. If the car breaks down, it's a nightmare. I have to text my father or my brother and ask them to call the emergency services or the breakdown services. So I text my father and then my father sometimes will call my brother who will send for breakdown cover, mechanics, for example. So sometimes it's involving other people in my communication. I can't directly contact services I need.
You said that you call your father and then your brother for your emergency. Would you mind me asking, are you married?
Yes, I'm married. Yeah, I'm married. But my wife is also deaf.
Okay.
So we're both deaf.
And do you have children?
Yes, I've got two girls, daughters.
Can they speak and hear normally?
Yeah, they're both hearing. They are our children. One of my daughters has got ADHD. She's been recently diagnosed, my youngest daughter.
May God bless her. Do they also know the sign languages?
Well, they use sort of home, what we call home sign language. So my wife and I use full BSL with each other, and my daughters have picked it up over time, but perhaps okay. They don't use it to the extent we do. It's a more basic version of sign language.
So they can speak, right? So how did you bring them up? Did you need an external help to basically learn them to speak, to teach them to speak?
Yeah, I'll explain. So obviously, they are what we term in the UK as coders, children of deaf adults. So these girls have deaf parents. They can use basic sign language. They are not interpreters. So we have our own ways of communicating. We have our own relationship. Obviously, I've got an interpreter on the call today, and that's a professional relationship. When I go out for meetings, when I go and lobby the government, when I talk to the police and local services, if I'm speaking to legal services or doctors or any professionals, I use an interpreter. But my children are not interpreters, so it's very different. They are children of deaf adults, so they've acquired sign language. Sign language is probably their first language. They can use sign language. They can read our sign language very, very well. They understand myself and my wife. But if they wanted to become interpreters, they'd need professional development, professional training, and some language courses as well.
Thank you so much for sharing that. You know, these are things which we don't know. We need your stories out there. We need deaf community, like, we should know, like, what's happening there, right? I mean, especially in this digital world, don't you think so?
Well, I agree. I have to agree with you. And for example, if I give an example, we bring someone who's lived with deaf people in a deaf family, a coder, with me. If you ask them to interpret for me, they might miss things. But if you have a professional interpreter, they're trained, they have language tools and skills that they can use in order to do their job properly. So that's why I use proper qualified sign language interpreters to work with me when I go to meetings, networking events, presentations, obviously podcasts, vlogs like we're doing today, to make sure that my representation is fluent and smooth and my information is being presented in an appropriately professional package.
You know, talking about digital, talking about podcast, I mean, talking about this technology, right? I mean, don't you have any apps instead of any interpreter? Because interpreter is not practical in your daily life, I think. I mean, it could be good for a professional setup like as these. Are there no apps developed that you could basically use and then, you know, it could speak on your behalf?
So that's a good question. So throughout my life, I've usually had a face-to-face interpreter with me, or my parents or my family have used sign language. Now, technology has had a huge impact, and digital technology and IT has had a huge impact on myself and the deaf community as well as the rest of the world. So people have had projects and ideas, and now there's lots and lots. I mean, it's interesting now. There's lots and lots of ideas and innovation and projects to do with communication and interpreter provision. So you might have a service where your interpreter can be transported, can be accessed via an app on your phone. So you can ask for a live interpreter through the video function on your phone. Sometimes they're working on holographic technology, so your interpreter can be a hologram that comes out of your phone. Obviously they've tried gloves to see if glove technology and motion capture from electronic gloves might be able to capture sign language, but it's not great. Obviously we have auto captions that can do live captioning, but there's still issues with that. We've got Google glasses now that you can put on and watch subtitles as you're watching film or theater. So technology is growing, but in terms of an AI generated interpreter, we have some models. So you might have a live interpreter that's being transmitted over a digital platform, a digital app, or you might have an AI generated interpreter, but it achieves two very different results. And the latter is not great. So I prefer to have either a live interpreter, either remote like we are today, or face to face. Obviously, with developments of technology and AI, if they can improve AI generated interpretation, who knows?
So, yeah, so there is a lot of work still yet to be done. You're saying the technology is still not up there.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I think it needs a lot more work. But there are companies out there and people working in the deaf community that are looking to test these new AI models and AI technologies.
Do the government pay these kind of costs? Like, I'm sure, like, there are jobless people. There are people who are struggling financially. And then still they need interpreter. I mean, do government in your country support, or do you know any other countries who support and basically give something monthly to basically, which encourages your professional journey?
Yes. So the government have actually a specific department called the Department for Work and Pensions. And that's where all benefit and support for people in employment, that's where the budgets are held. So I apply for a special government grant, and then they will give me money for technology, for interpreting, and
nice.
And then I have to make an application for this grant. I have to explain exactly what support I need, and then they will provide me a budget for my support in my working life. But other countries don't have perhaps the same system as England. They have different systems. I do believe we're really lucky in the UK because we have a government that wants to support disabled and deaf people into work. We have the Department of Works and Pensions that has a ring-fenced budget that's specifically for access for people in work. They will help people who need wheelchair provision. They'll help deaf people in work with interpreter provision. But when I fly internationally, example, when I fly out to the Middle East and ask, does the government fund your interpreters for your in-work situation? They say no. We have to ask the family to help us and to fund the additional cost of interpreting. And also the quality in interpreting is not professional, because wow. Sometimes friends and family do it as voluntary work. Sometimes the family members will do it as a favor for the deaf person to run their business. So you don't have that quality potentially that we do in the UK. So in England, Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland, the government spend a lot of money on interpreting provision. We also, interpreting is not a regulated profession, but we have a registration where interpreters who've qualified actually can upload their qualifications, so we can choose accredited interpreters. We also have online systems. We also have companies like Sign Health that support people with their mental health issues. We have interpreted support if we want to contact emergency services now, for example, 999 to contact ambulance, police, fire services. You can now actually do that through an app.
Amazing.
Through access and explain the emergency through a sign language interpreter direct to the services that you need support for. So there has been provision and support for the deaf community, both in terms of in-work support and societal support as well.
You know, out of 6 to 7 billion people in this world, what is the percentage of deaf people around the world? Like, do you have a number?
So we have an organization called the World Federation of the Deaf, WFD, and they are still campaigning internationally to get a international sign system verified as an international language. And the reason that they want to do that and get that support is that people can then learn international sign and have those cross-border conversations. And then we can start doing projects like this. At the moment, deaf people exist in their own countries in very small silos. It's absolutely impossible to get actual statistics. Like in the UK, we think there's 50 to 150,000 sign language users. We think there's about 20,000 profoundly deaf people as well. It's just very hard. So you're looking at these different statistics. We can't even get accurate statistics in the UK. It's impossible to think about getting accurate statistics worldwide, but that is one of the targets of the World Federation of the Deaf.
Now let's talk about your professional journey. Like, how did you choose the profession which you are in right now? Like, I'm assuming that you do business trainings and you help deaf people, you motivate them on their professional journey, right? So you're a trainer. This is what I assume.
Okay, so I do business consultation with deaf, hard of hearing, and hearing people as well. So with everyone, really, I look at startup, early stage businesses, and I train them to set up their own business and also support them to develop and grow their businesses once they are established.
This was your first business idea, or did you have any other ideas failed before this one?
So I had two or three different sort of stages in my life. When I was 10, my parents signed very basic sign language. And I asked my father, I want to become a millionaire. And my father said, well, I'm really worried about you, son. I'm worried about your communication barriers. I'm worried about your future. But my father said, we got to keep you confident. We've got to build on your confidence. So he worked in two different areas. He ran branches of the post office and he also did property development. So though I was 10 and I was still at primary school, my father said, after school, come to the post office and work in the back office, not on the front desk, but work in the back office, looking at the numbers, counting up the money, the single one pence coins, 2p coins, count up all the money, look at tax, VAT, accounting, and just learn on the job. And then also when my father was developing property, I would travel with him to look at the developments. I would see him negotiate with clients. I'd see the properties being developed, the kitchens being refurbished. And I just learned from watching my father until the age of 16, 17, 18. And then my tutor asked me at college, what would you like to do? And at that time when I was 16, I said, my passion is about piloting planes. And my tutor said, this is going to be really difficult. You're still working in your father's business part time, but you want to be a pilot. And I said, yes, I'm passionate about it. And he said, well, I think you maybe need to continue in education in that case. So why don't you look at learning some levels of information technology, IT? So I realized that I would learn IT and computer science. But then when I was picking courses at university and looking through the prospectus, I realized, actually, I want to do business. That's what I've done all my life. I've followed my father in his businesses. I've always been interested in entrepreneurship. And then when I graduated in 2009 and thought, oh, what's next? Should I get a job or should I set up my own business? But I remembered that experience of talking to my tutor and them asking me about my skills and my experience and what have I done outside of college. And my tutor said, well, why don't you look at getting some work experience at Birmingham Airport? And so I started working part-time in Birmingham Airport, and I was doing sort of food product services. So I had to wear the hat, the gloves, the white coat, the protective clothing, and worked at Birmingham Airport until I was 16, until I was 18. And the money was good and I saved the money. And then I saw at the office at the food product services place that I was working at Birmingham Airport, I saw one of those kind of corporate structures of the company. And I asked my manager, I said, this is the corporate structure of the company. So where are you and where am I on this? And so my manager said, oh, I'm sort of in the middle, really. And I said, well, where am I? And he said, I'm afraid you're right at the bottom. And that really hit me. I said, how do you get to the top? How do you get to the top of the tree? And he said, well, you need to study, you need to develop your skills, your qualifications, your knowledge, have innovative ideas. And this really struck me. And I said, right, I'm going to go to university, I'm going to get qualified, I'm going to get a degree. And then after that, in 2009, I was thinking about what I wanted to do once I graduated. And I thought, why not set up my own business? I've saved this money. I've got money to invest. And so I set up a company called Deaf Business Services Limited. And I was really excited by it. I had an office space. I had advertising. I had posters. I had business cards. I went to networking and started meeting other business people. And a hearing person came up to me and I gave them my business card. And the hearing person said, I don't think you should have the word deaf in your card. Your business isn't deaf related. And I said, what do you mean? I am deaf. He said, well, you call yourself Deaf Business Services Limited. You want to be a commercial private company, but having the word deaf in the title makes it seem like you're a charitable venture, a not-for-profit. And I thought, oh, wow. Now I've spent all this money on branding and marketing my business. So I changed it to business consultancy and then went out to marketing and networking events. And then business grew. So that was really interesting, a really interesting lesson for me to learn about branding the business. And I've been running my own business for 20 years now.
Very interesting story. So you had a big hustle before reaching where you are right now.
It's a very interesting story.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I always think about the communication barriers that I faced throughout my life. But, still.
So when you meet other business people, because you said you're not just doing business with the deaf people, you're also training normal people. So I'm sure there are interpreters. Did you face challenges connecting, converting, or, selling to them? And if so, if you can share me some instances.
Yeah, so, obviously I face lots of challenges as a deaf person. Even if I want to go and set up a business bank account, I have to wait for them to book an interpreter. It can be 2 or 3 weeks wait for me to get an appointment. If I was trying to set up a business bank account using paper and pen, it would just take hours and having to fill in and complete a load of forms. Now, obviously, with digital technology, it's much easier to open a bank account. Obviously, now with online banking, things are much more straightforward. But that has been a challenge I've faced in the past. Obviously, when I meet clients, obviously, I bring in an interpreter. If I have a different interpreter who's not Rachel, who's someone that I don't know, who I haven't worked with before, I have to really prepare them. I have to explain the business that I run, the services that I provide, the types of activity I do. So they're completely prepared. So when I start the meeting, they're fine. But sometimes the interpreter just forgets information that I've told them. And if an interpreter can't interpret me correctly, it is actually embarrassing. So I remember an award that I went to, and it was in central London. And I met this interpreter for the first time. It was a man and a woman. And I worked with these interpreters. They seemed really nice. And we sat around the table of 10 people. And I was having conversations around the table. And it was a fantastic evening. Then they started announcing the awards and opening the envelopes with the names of the entrepreneur to win awards there. But the interpreter didn't tell me when my name was read out. And actually the people around the table who were looking at me going, you need to go. You need to go and collect your award. I think maybe the interpreters somehow they just didn't clock my name or they'd forgotten my name. But they didn't tell me that I was supposed to go up and get my award. They didn't tell me my name had been called. So that was a real embarrassment on both the interpreters and myself, actually. I was really embarrassed because I was late to collect my award and I had to walk up in front of everyone. And then afterwards, I said, what happened? The interpreters, what happened? You didn't say my name. And they said, oh, we really apologize. We're so sorry. But they couldn't really explain to me what had happened in that situation. But this is a situation that happens when I have new and different interpreters. So, obviously, sometimes you can book interpreters direct if they're freelance. Sometimes you have to book them through an agency, which is fine. And sometimes I'll book an interpreter through an agency, but we don't know each other, but that's fine. We're going to work together. But they don't know anything about business. They might not have the jargon or the words that are associated in business environments and business circles. freelance interpreters will work in all sorts of different situations. So I've had to kind of create my own list of interpreters that I feel are skilled, that understand me, that understand the business environment, that mean that I can have a positive outcome in the meetings that I have. So I have my own list of freelance interpreters that I'll work with, not really using an agency. Now, I remember when back in college, and Rachel was interpreting for me back in college, it was fine. If I had another interpreter come in, we'd have to get used to each other. And also if they're trying to speak for me, sometimes there'd be a delay. But when I work with Rachel, it's much quicker, it's much smoother. We know each other really well. So for professional meetings, networking, I do have designated interpreters such as Rachel that I prefer to take with me to bookings, because I know that things will be much, much smoother and more fluent.
So I'm sure any interpreter mistakes might have costed you in business.
Yes, that has happened. I've prepared information ready for presentations. And then about 10 minutes before, I've sent the information to the people that I'm giving a presentation to. I've sent them the slides. I've said to the interpreter, did you receive the slides? Do you understand everything? They say, yes. And then I start signing, and then it's a deathly silence in the audience because the interpreter's got lost. And it doesn't...
Trust me, this is not only your problem. This is even my problem with employees. You prepare them for many things. At the time of performance, they act like they didn't know the information. So don't worry. I think we are on the same page on this way.
Right. I can imagine. Yeah, I can imagine it happens.
So your dream was to be a millionaire when you were children. When you were a child, your dream was to be a millionaire when you were a child. Are you a millionaire yet? At least half?
Well, I'll have to check in the bottom drawer. I'm not sure how much cash I've saved up. I'd have to have a little check.
How's the business going? Like, with all this being explained, like, practically, how's the business moving now?
Business is good. Business is normal. Prior to COVID, business was brilliant. I was really thriving prior to COVID. And then, unfortunately, when the British government announced a series of lockdowns, it really impacted me on my business. Also, as a deaf person, this rule about wearing face masks is impossible for deaf people because we can't see facial expressions.
God, yeah.
We can't read lips. It's a nightmare. So, and also that 2 meter distance as well. If someone's got a visual impairment as well as deafness, I think that really, really is difficult to navigate. And we had lockdowns for nearly a year. And prior to that, I was going to networking. I was presenting. I was doing lots of word travel. But COVID really had a very, very catastrophic effect on my business. And then everything changed to Zoom. People will freeze on Zoom. Sometimes the technology is okay, but sometimes you have to go back and explain things again because things have dropped out. People freeze on screen. Yeah, it's added extra challenges, but now everyone loves Zoom. So this is, remote is a new way of working.
So I see also, like, through your social media that you are booked in different countries. Are you physically invited there, or are you like doing some online kind of trainings?
So prior to COVID, I was flying all over the world. And then obviously we went into lockdown. Everything changed to remote working and Zoom. So I did a few trainings on Zoom. But I'm invited to deliver these trainings. And usually, unfortunately, a lot of the time signals are weak. If you've got a lot of people on a Zoom, it affects the quality. So it's very hard to deliver training online. So now I'm so happy that restrictions are lifted. So I'm back hopping on planes, traveling everywhere, all over the world.
Interesting. So when you travel with an interpreter, because I know that an interpreter who's not used to you is very challenging to get your messages delivered across, right? So are you traveling with them?
Right, good question. So I'll explain. So when I'm working with the deaf community internationally and I'm working with other deaf people, if I'm only presenting to deaf people, that's fine. I can adjust and use their sign language system and use international sign for my training and direct delivery. If I'm working with hearing people, then I need to understand if they're hearing, what language they speak, do they have access to a sign language interpreter? What is the audience we're trying to reach? Is it a hearing audience, a disabled audience who might not necessarily be deaf? So I had an experience in South Africa. I went to the World Federation of the Deaf in 2011, and I flew there and I met and did a lot of networking with a lot of deaf people from different countries, kind of researching what their situation is with interpreters. So, for example, some interpreters can speak Chinese and use their Chinese sign system. Some are from Japan, can speak Japanese and use the Japanese sign system. We have interpreters that can use the international sign system, which is great, or I can also use American Sign Language if I want. But when I choose to present to the audience, then I need an interpreter who can speak for me. Last February, this year, I flew to Dubai and I was featured on a program called Love in Dubai.
Yeah, I've seen that.
L-O-V-I-N, Love in Dubai. And prior to that, I had to prepare and arrange an interpreter from Dubai. And I managed to find an interpreter who was available at the right time and the right date in Dubai. And then it got nearer the time and they said, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm going to have to pull out of your booking. I'm going to have to cancel. And that was 3 days before my actual television appearance. So that put me in crisis mode, having to ask people, well, do you know any interpreters in Dubai? Do you know anyone who can do international sign language?
Oh, my God.
And then someone said, well, I know an Arabic-speaking interpreter, but I needed an English-speaking sign language interpreter. And then finally, I found an interpreter who could speak English and used American Sign Language. So that was fine that we were able to communicate. So that was a massive relief, but that was a lot of stress that I could have done without. So now when you see clips, we've got three people. We've got the host, we've got the interpreter, another host and myself. And that was live for Love in Dubai. I mean, it was very, very nerve-wracking. Because I had to ask the interpreter before I arrive, can we please do some preparation? And can we meet earlier and clarify all these key points of jargon and history? And we did that. And then it was fantastic. It was really smooth, the whole conversation, because we'd done that extra preparation, that extra work. And I do get invited a lot from international communities for me to go and do public speaking, but it can be really difficult now. If I want to go and do a speaking engagement, I have to ask the British government to provide additional budget for my interpreter's flight and accommodation to travel with me. And at the moment, the waiting lists to apply for additional support is a nightmare. But I know that there's a big market out there. There's a huge opportunity for me. But so if I fly to a country where I'm not communicating directly with deaf people, that I want to communicate and network with hearing people and work with hearing people, I need a British Sign Language interpreter with me. But that is an additional application to the government. So sometimes I go for book signings and book sellings. That's fine. That's an easy situation to deal with. I do find that sometimes traveling on my own to certain business environments is not easy without an interpreter. If it's in the deaf community, that's fine. That's very smooth. It's no problem. But sometimes I am invited by hearing organizations. So I have to then work out, is my interpreter, my designated interpreter available? I might have to go to London to speak on a panel or on a board. I want to make sure I've got the right interpreter with me. So yeah, a lot of juggling diaries.
You spoke about, you having the Arabic interpreter. Why you couldn't use the Arabic interpreter? Because I saw you typing something in Arabic recently in social media, asking duas for your father or mother, I think. So there's two questions now. Do you the sign languages of Arab or you don't do it? And are you an Arab? That's my question.
Okay. So I'm English. I read and write in English, but I have six different sign languages: British Sign Language, American Sign Language, South African Sign Language, Moroccan okay. Sign Language, International Moroccan. Sign, and Arabic Sign Language. But I can't read Arabic. I can't write Arabic. I use Google Translate, for example, to transfer my English, my written English, or I might ask a friend to do me a translation so I can pop it on social media. So yeah, I use a couple of different tools, but I don't read or write Arabic.
Interesting.
Okay. So, you know, you while interpreting, I have noted that you said Birmingham, Dubai. Can you show me, like, how do you say Dubai or how do you say Birmingham? I just want to see in signs. Can you teach me today?
Okay. So, when I'm in Britain, I use the British sign for Dubai, which is this, your hand from your palm to the bottom of your hand.
So, is it like that? Dubai. So, D for Dubai.
Yeah, it's the hotel, Burj Khalifa hotel.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was D for Dubai.
No, it's to represent the incredibly iconic hotel. So we use that in Britain.
That's
we
amazing.
Sign Dubai like that. But when I actually go to Dubai, people sign Dubai on the nose. It's Dubai. And the reason people sign that is because when you greet, you touch noses.
Yeah, khasham. We say khasham like that.
Yeah, but in Dubai, it's about all about the nose. So the sign for Dubai is on the nose like that.
Okay, now we are going to go ask more now. You know, it's getting interesting. So how do you say Riyadh? How do you say Riyadh or Saudi?
Oh, well, we have an international sign, which is like this, Saudi. So that's recognized across the world. It's two fingers on the forehead. So that's recognized around the world, Saudi Arabia.
Saudi.
Why is it so? Like you said, Dubai was the Burj Al Arab, right? Now, what is this for? Is it a respect to Saudi, like a salute?
I think because a lot of people wear a lot of the headdresses. So I think it's to symbolize the headdress, the sort of Arabic headdress that's worn traditionally by men in the Middle East.
So the sign language has a lot of meaning, like why they chose this particular sign. Like there is a knowledge behind it.
Yes. Oh, yes, absolutely. So obviously when hearing people speak, they have sort of syntax that goes with their speech. The speech paints pictures. It's the same with sign language. We work in creating a visual picture.
Okay, so now I learned Dubai, okay? So I can talk to him directly, Dubai, and then I can say, this is Saudi.
Yeah.
Now I want to know Bahrain. I'm sorry I'm asking, but, you know, I'm sure this is very interesting for our viewers as well.
Okay, so Bahrain in Britain, I'm afraid we say B-Rain. But when I've met people in the Middle East, I'm from Bahrain, I think the sign is like these three fingers and it goes across the head, Bahrain. I think that's what's used internationally.
So this is Bahrain.
Yeah, I think
like three
it's
times?
Because Bahrain, in Bahrain, when you've got your headdress, then there are sort of these circle emblem motifs on the forehead. So I think that's in reference to that.
So am I doing it right? Three fingers?
Is that right? Yeah, just twice on the head, once on one side, once on the other.
Okay, now, so we did Bahrain, so we did Dubai, we did Saudi, and we did Bahrain. What's Oman?
Oman, thumb on the chin.
Oman.
And wiggle your fingers.
Oman.
And you've got your palm out.
Okay.
Yeah, oh yeah. Actually, what? Sorry, not palm out, but move the palm forward a little bit. So it's just to show you the palm was out, but yeah,
so,
it's wiggled.
Why is it this way? Like, what's the wisdom behind?
You've seen people wearing in white with sort of a belt as well as the headdress. So I believe it could be linked to the headdress and also potentially the knife that's in the waistband or the white clothes. I think it's something linked to cultural dress. Oman.
And what about Qatar?
Oh, it's on a lip against your finger as if you're going shush, and then your finger curls down onto your chin.
Oh, sorry. I don't know. Okay. Like that.
Finger to your lips as if you're saying shush. And then you pull the finger down onto your chin. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This language is very interesting. Wow.
But there's so much to learn. I mean, while you are speaking, there's so many actions you need to do in a second for interpreter to understand. That means you're doing a lot of signs. Like there's a sign for a word, right?
Right. So I'll explain. So when I meet deaf people, when I'm out and about, if I'm in an informal setting, in different cultures, for example, when I'm out in the Middle East and I'm networking and speaking to people, I'm constantly learning their different ways of signing. But it's different when I'm working with interpreter. Often when I'm working with the deaf community, it's a lot more informal. But when I bring an interpreter in, then it becomes a more formal situation. So it's about really working with your interpreter and sharing those signs from the community with your interpreter. So when I'm in a business meeting, it's a professional situation. We use formal signed languages. But when we're informal, we can be a little bit more relaxed with our sign language. We use more specific cultural references rather than a standard use of sign language. It's got a lot more cultural implications.
Okay, now since we used many names on the Middle Eastern country, I think what's left over? I think left the Kuwait is left. How is it in Kuwait?
Okay, so two fingers rubbing across each other.
Okay.
And they kind of come away from each other. So two fingers on top of each other and pull it back. Yeah.
Okay, now what's the wisdom behind this one?
So I think if you've seen in Kuwait, a lot of people, I think it's to do with the war. When you see marks on buildings and symbols in building on marked on buildings, I think it's a hangover from the war, but it's definitely a war reference.
On Dubai, you said it's like that. So what about UAE and Abu Dhabi?
Yeah. So Dubai, that's just Dubai, the capital Dubai. UAE, we sign like this, a C, sort of, we make a cup shape on our hand and we take it down the side of the face. And that's because UAE, men often have sideburns. It's kind of a cultural, cross-cultural kind of facial hair. So
this is UAE?
Yes. Yeah.
Is it because they have a line on their beard all the time? That's why?
Yeah, it's the line. It's the line, the shape of the beard. Yeah. So it's that kind of sharp line of the beard on the chin.
I'm sorry, I'm going more into this. But how do you make fun of someone or bully someone? Or, you know, for a joke, not like bully, like seriously, you know? Like, say, like some joke, you know, about someone. To your children or something like that. I mean, I'm interested to know.
Yeah, so we sort of have different humor in sign language. So obviously, if you've grown up with someone, then you've got that kind of childhood memories and you've grown up together. But if you meet a deaf person, you might say, "How are you?" and put your thumb up. And often it's a very easy first sign for people to learn. I've seen people use it almost as a joke with gesture. We do a lot of jokes with gesture and body language.
Rep.
That's how we tell a joke. Yeah, we use body language. It's very, very different culturally, and it has a very specific cultural context.
Okay, so it's in different culture, it is different kind of ways that you express with the signs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for example, some communities, because I don't know them so well, I don't tend to go in and sort of tease and joke around. It's really difficult. It will really depend. It's usually my childhood friends or people that I've grown up with that I would really use humor and jokes with.
I mean, people who can speak basically even misunderstand each other when it is cross-culture. the jokes don't fall at right place sometimes, you know, they misunderstand the second person. So I think it is something similar and a bit more challenging with you.
Yeah, I can imagine. In the deaf community, obviously the sign language using deaf community, we do a lot of pointing. We sort of say that way, look that way. And I think hearing people go, oh, what's going on? What's going on? And get confused, because I think when you're pointing, they think that we're referring to something specifically. We might be referring to something in the abstract. And sometimes you're trying to point with hearing people to show them things. For example, if you're going into a shop and there are shelves behind the counter, you might want to get a drink, or you might want to, if you see a drink on a shelf in a restaurant and you want a bottle of that specific drink, you're going, oh, go forwards, go backwards, go up, go down. You're kind of trying to get them to point in the right, you're trying to get them to kind of understand your pointing from the opposite direction, so they know that you're referring to behind them.
Do you think we should know the sign language, like everyone out there should know some basic sign language? Do you think it is important? Do you think they should learn it? What's your opinion?
Well, I would say in every country you have deaf people. So it'd be great if everyone learned their sign system, some very basic signs from their signed language in their country. I think it's the same the world over. Not everyone speaks English. So people often do, but you know, it would be nice if English people learned a little bit of British sign language. And I think it's the same around the world.
If the whole world could understand one thing about deaf life, what should it be? Like, what's the message you want to give to the world?
Well, I would say hearing people, you can know that there are deaf people out there in society. If you see deaf people signing, try and say hello. Just try and wave at them. That's a universal sign. Wave at them, say hello. Try your best to basically communicate with basic language. And give that deaf person an opportunity to wave and respond. Just try and use some kind of basic gesture to communicate. And as you meet deaf people more regularly, you'll build your knowledge of sign language up, you know, and then who knows, after a few years, you might be a qualified interpreter.
That's very interesting. I wish I could. So let's do that course for all out there. So if I see a deaf person, so I know that I can do, hey, or something like that. Hey, how are you? How can I ask that in British Sign Language or International Sign Language?
Just put your thumbs up. Say, are you good? Yeah. Thumbs up is the kind of universal sign.
So I say, hi, good.
Good.
Yeah. Hi, you good? Hi,
you good? So guys, see, you can have this basic signs.
Yeah, just really basic gestures like that, that we all know. That hearing and deaf people know. Do you want a drink? For example, you, me, go for a drink. That's really simple, isn't it? We just go get a drink.
Okay, that's good. And what about, how may I help you? Do you want to help? How could we ask that?
So if you don't know sign, it can be difficult. But at this point, I would use an app called Big Words or notes on your phone and ask them. So at this point, if you want to go deeper into the conversation, if you don't know sign language, use your phone. It depends whether they've got a good grasp of written language, whether they read Arabic or English or whatever written language they've learnt at school. But it's worth a try anyway. And you can use gesture as well. That's good.
That's amazing. So sorry, you know, this podcast is so heavy for me. I'm myself trying to comprehend what I'm doing here right now. I didn't expect that, you know, it would go this way, that you would also explain, like, this is what I wanted. Like, I wanted some purpose out of this podcast, and your genuine concerns when you just said it, it got me thinking, to be honest. I never thought that way. I think the only instance I had was once a customer was calling me on video, and I was like cutting. I said, no, I don't answer video. I only answer call. And then I knew that he texted, hey, I can't speak, something like that. And then he did a video, and then I barely understood. And then basically, he said, you know what, we will text. I have another person who will text with you. That's the only confrontation which I had. But that's amazing. You know, this is also awareness for people that people like you are there and as professional as us, doing business and try, and despite every challenge, you have your family, you are trying to earn bread for them. I think it's a profound message, and I really thank you to choose me to email me saying that, hey, you know what, let's do a podcast. And the minute I got this message, and when you said deaf, I said, you know what, I'm not going to think, I'm going to say yes, and then I will think.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And I'm so grateful. So the reason I wanted to kind of be more accessible and sort of be broadcast more around the world, because hearing people have their own companies, their own businesses, everything's so hearing focused. So I just want hearing people to understand that there are deaf people out there trying to make their way in the world, trying to set up their own business, trying to work, trying to network, trying to make connections and collaborate. So it's just really important to be aware that there are other different ways of communicating. So really the reason why I wanted to do a podcast with you was to raise awareness, because deaf people are, it's a hidden disability. We're often invisible. The same with blindness, actually, as well. So it's just about trying to get deaf people seen in an equal footing as hearing people. And just to say to hearing people, I just want you to realize that deaf people are working, they're running their own businesses, they're in education, they're making products, they're delivering services. We've got interpreters out there. It's easy to communicate with deaf people now. And also, I want to say to the audience, please share this message. There's two things. So I'd love to do a TEDx talk, and I'd love to also go and speak to the UN. I'd love to go and talk to them about the issues that deaf people face. Can you imagine the platform of a deaf people speaking on those two platforms? And I'd love to talk to them about the challenges that we face in the business community as deaf people. Obviously, I've written my autobiography. Here it is. I'll just show you the cover. So
interesting.
Yeah.
You look handsome.
Born deaf to MBE. Thanks. Oh, here's the back. There's a QR code as well. So
good.
That's how you can order the book. But you can order it directly from my website as well. And I sign books and I post them all over the world. So just a small plug for my book, if that's okay, on your podcast.
To the viewers out there, tag UN, tag TEDx, tag all the big organizations. You will be doing him a favor, getting him to speak. And if he speaks because of you, you know, there's nothing better than this. And second of all, if someone wants to book you for speaking, how could they reach to you so that I can add this on the video?
So I've got my email, which is shazad@nawab.com. I'm sure you've got my email. You can tag it to social media. People can ask me questions. I think if you want me to come and speak face to face, then I need a little bit of notice, because obviously I'm always constantly organizing my diaries with my interpreters, with Rachel. Obviously, when I come to speak in a country, I do need my expenses covered, and we need to arrange flights and hotels, for example. So I do need a couple of months notice just to get things in place in terms of access and support. But always welcome to come.
I hope you get more and more such kind of request. I'm so happy to have you again at World's Local Podcast. Now this is to the viewers, guys, support him first of all, and support these kind of podcasts. you know, subscribe if you didn't hit subscribe so we can bring amazing guests like him. This has been by far, every podcast has been special and this has been over the top. Let's see how it goes. And I want you guys to comment and share his profile to the stories, and let's make this viral. Let's make the inclusivity which we are talking about and which we are roaring here and there. Let's make this a practical part of our life and among our communities, and let's meet people around with special abilities like this. And having that said, thank you so much, Mr. Shahzad. Thank you so much for choosing us. And let's see, I hope we could meet one day, or, you know, have you over on a physical podcast. Let's see how things go from here. And yeah, I would love to have a round two. And if you guys need a round two, come and doubt round two.
Oh, lovely. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time and the fantastic chat. And I just hopefully think this is a great opportunity. It's wonderful for deaf and hearing people to chat over podcasts like this. It raised an incredible amount of awareness over deafness and interpreter awareness. So let's hopefully the message will grow and grow, and it will be shown all over the world. Thank you.
I hope the same too. And thank you, Miss Rachel, as well, being a part of it. It has been a great, the conversation was so smooth. This was my first time having a guest like Shahzad, but you have done an amazing job. Thank you so much. Thank you, viewers. See you for next time.
Thank you.